Hello everyone, welcome to Women Folk, a brand new podcast with me, Maria Wallace. I've been a grassroots music promoter under the name True North Music for the last 10 years, putting on gigs and booking tours for some of the finest artists in folk roots, bluegrass and Americana. This brand new podcast is all about telling the stories of women working in roots music, on stage and behind the scenes.
I've thought a lot about, you know, the protest song being of grievance and the protest song of what we're fighting to create. Like, the positive side, too, is so important to imagine the future that we want. And I think we can help people imagine better things through music as well, and to sing into existence how we would like the world to be.
My guest today is Melody Walker, an acclaimed songwriter, singer, and musician based in Nashville, Tennessee. Melody toured with the band Front Country for over a decade, and that's how we first got to know each other. In fact, Melody and her partner Jacob even lent me their home and their car for a week while I was over in Nashville on the Leadership Bluegrass course, and they were on tour in Australia. Melody's really been building her reputation as a songwriter, and earlier this year she won a prestigious Grammy Award. We chat about all this, as well as her recent successes with the Grateful Dead tribute band with The Difference, Bertha, Grateful Drag. As well as being a creative powerhouse, Melody's always been a strong voice for social justice, and I'm delighted to have had the chance to catch up with her for this episode of Women Folk. Welcome to the podcast, Melody Walker.
Hi, good to see you, Maria. It's been a long time.
It has. The big news is that you won a Grammy recently.
Yeah, how did that happen?
This was for Best American Roots Song, which you co-wrote with Sierra Ferrell.
Yes.
And how did that project come about? Did you already know each other?
Yeah, so I met Sierra through mutual bluegrass friends that we all know who play in her band now. So Josh Rilko, who was in Lindsay Lou and the Flatbellies, really good friend of ours. Oliver Craven from the Straybirds, like Jeff Saunders, who used to play with Sierra Hull and also played in Front Country on bass for our very last tour before 2020 ended the music. And they're old friends. Mm-hmm. So when they started playing music with her, that's when I really actually got to meet her and get to know her. And she was still kind of just like my up and coming artist, you know, had barely made her first debut on Rounder. And I just saw her perform live, and her voice is undeniable. It's one of the coolest voices of a generation. And if you hear her sing acoustically in a room specifically, just in like a jam here in East Nashville, she's so loud and present, and it just commands your attention. And I think that comes from her background busking for many, many years on the streets in New Orleans and Seattle and everywhere around the country. She really has it. She knows how to grab that person off the street and make them listen, you know?
What was it like to be there at such a massive shindig?
It was really great. I'm glad that I felt grounded enough to enjoy it, you know? And not take it too seriously, but just seriously enough to, you know, feel honored by it. And the whole thing felt very respectful and cool. Like, I felt celebrated by the Academy, despite, you know, I had a question before going because of, you know, how much it costs to go, how little they seem to care that it's going to cost you that much to go, you know, just for a nomination.
I think that's brilliant that you did challenge them about that, about them putting up the cost for a plus one to massive amounts.
Because you're usually not going to go alone. You're going to bring your mama or your partner or whoever, you know, you're going to bring somebody who is really meaningful to you, who wants to see you win. So of course I was going to bring Jacob
Groupman.
Yeah. Partner. Yeah. Who I was in a band with for many years in Front Country, and we're continuing to be in bands together. Now we do drag together, and we'll get to that later.
Yes. He's a brilliant musician also.
Great musician. And, you know, he's been my partner for 15 years and musical partner too, more importantly. So of course I was going to bring a date, and I thought, okay, maybe that ticket will be $200 or $300. No, it was $1,000.
Which is just insane. And that's the same policy for Beyonce's plus one as somebody who's a working roots musician.
Yeah, like give us a sliding scale at least. So yeah, I was a little miffed by that, and kind of that didn't feel very respectful. And so I just didn't know. There's kind of a little bit of a class system in the Grammys, right? There's the pre-show, pre-broadcast, all the awards for every little category of like jazz, vocal world music, sacred, choral, like whatever it is, you know, like I'm probably making that one up, you know, all the various like Latin music awards, Americana, bluegrass, all of that is in the sort of kiddie table awards, which are earlier, but they all have the same meaning, you know.
Yeah,
I won a Grammy, and no one is like, oh, well, did you win like a bluegrass or Americana Grammy, or did you win a real one? No one cares or knows about that. You won a Grammy, you know, so that part's great.
And hopefully it's kind of something that will open doors for you professionally, or, you know, continue to help build your career.
I'm not sure it'll open a door, but it might get an email answered. That's what I figure.
You've also been doing a lot of other co-writing in the past few years. You had a near miss at a Grammy.
Near miss, last year. Like that.
You know, this is officially your first nomination. You co-wrote a few numbers on the Crooked Tree album with Molly Tuttle. And that album won a Grammy.
That album won a Grammy. And I had the title track, Crooked Tree, with her. And I'm really proud of that song. I know you know that one.
Yes. Yes, that's become a kind of modern favorite.
I love that. I just want people to play the songs. Yeah. Yeah. I would love to write a standard, you know, something that would be considered, you know, that's getting played at jams. That would be like my absolute dream, you know, people playing it around campfires at bluegrass festivals. And I think Crooked Tree is kind of on its way to do that, which makes me so happy because that song's really meaningful to me too.
Definitely.
You know, a lot of bluegrass songs are not about philosophical, inspirational things, you know, like they're just about heartbreak and
trains,
being a whiny man. Yeah. and this has like something to say, so I really like that. And it's written by women, which is even better.
Yeah, it's so that again it showcases your kind of progressive outlook and your you know, aim of championing women and kind of minoritized groups, but in a soft, you know, it's kind of soft power way of doing these things, isn't it? Tell us a little bit about the genesis of that song.
Yeah, that song came out of the end of 2020. My band Front Country had decided we were going to go on an indefinite hiatus. And I kind of, that was a really good decision to make, but also the election was really anxious, and that happened in the end of 2020. And a lot of it caught up with me. I hadn't been writing or playing music so much for a year. I'd been sort of forcing it and trying to, but it just didn't really feel natural. And I felt very disconnected from my art. And I went into a pretty bad depression that winter. And I really did not feel like playing music or writing music. And I didn't know if it was going to come back. And that was the scary part. That's what really scared me, is it really felt like it was like far away and lost, you know?
Yeah.
But I have always wanted to be a writer and a co-writer, and to have other people sing songs that we write, and art, especially artists that I really value and appreciate and think are amazing. And so when Molly, who is a friend of mine already from back in California, when Molly asked me to write with her for her like return to bluegrass, she had sort of gone away and done sort of indie folk, indie songwriter stuff after college. And this was her like being like, you know what? I can do something here in bluegrass. I want to like stake my claim in bluegrass. When she asked me to write for that project, on the inside, I wasn't sure if I had it still, you know, if I could write, if it was, the muse was going to be with me. But on the outside, I said, yeah, sure.
Good decision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to just show up, right? That's part of it. You know, there's that phrase, like, even if you're scared, you can still do it while you're scared. You know,
you mentioned Front Country a couple of times, so maybe if we just go back and revisit that, that's kind of how we know each other, from your band Front Country, which was touring for probably about 10 years, and you guys toured the UK a few times, and you know, I put on some gigs for you and booked a tour for you, and
yeah,
it was kind of, again, not the average bluegrass band, right?
Yeah,
something more interesting and progressive, I think. Great band.
Thank you.
Feel the beating thunder rolling underground, under your feet, and things are moving all the
I think we were, you know, a musician's musician band kind of thing, because we're very eclectic, progressive bluegrass band, you know, female fronted, very harmony focused, but did everything from 80s pop and rock covers to, you know, originals that were very all over the place, pop, Americana, like no rules, very singer-songwritery, sometimes folky, sometimes we would get into like, you know, a little bit of like neo-Celtic sounds. We just do, you know, all of our influences, mash them together into this band, which is really rewarding to do. It's not always the best way to sell a band, though. But we did well regardless, because we worked really hard at it.
You probably finished at the right time, right? Because
that's what I reckon. Say, yeah.
That part of the one of the questions I'm asking my guests on this is like the whole thing about touring for grassroots artists, and you know, do people have any tips for navigating that? Because it's a tough lifestyle, isn't it? You know, you guys are on the road for a long time, but now what we've seen since the pandemic is that it's, you know, even tougher for, especially for a 5-piece band to tour with the economics of it all, I think.
Yeah, it is. You know, but what's funny too is I have this new project, Bertha, that is a 7-piece band, and
yes,
we're blowing up and doing incredibly well. It is a cover project, but it's a different sort of take on that, and that we've been commanding fees all over the place and able to tour. So
Bertha, Grateful Drag, that's the kind of subtitle of the band. Or mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about the genesis of Bertha and what the band is.
Yeah, so I alluded to losing touch with the joy of music and being completely burnt out. I suddenly had stage performance anxiety, you know, I had lost my tolerance, you know, the muscles over 2020, not performing for a whole year. And if you don't use it, you'll lose it. And I was talking about this with a friend who was dealing with the same thing. Caitlin Doyle, who was in this band Smooth Hound Smith, who had, you know, gone on arena tours opening for the Chicks. And they did really well. They were a great local Nashville band, a duo, husband and wife duo. And they got a pandemic divorce as well. So the band and their marriage ended. And it needed to, like everything needs to end. Things change. People move on. They do even bigger, better things, and they become more themselves, you know. So there's grief, but there's also like rebirth. And so this was part of the grief and rebirth for me from Front Country. And it was also for Caitlin, for her band Smooth Hound Smith. And we were talking about like how we were going to get back on stage and get our groove back, if you will. We were talking about, well, maybe we could just kind of put together some kind of local thing, you know, like a residency or something local that would be kind of fun and low stakes. And we're like, well, what has lower expectations and more joy than the Grateful Dead? You know, we both love Grateful Dead music, but that scene can be very bro-y. And can be there's just not as many women performing music in the Grateful Dead scene. So we were talking about that. And we're like, well, maybe we could start an all-women Grateful Dead band. But then we realized there's a band called the Brown Eyed Women. There's another band called American Beauties in the Bay Area that are all-women Grateful Dead projects. And we also had Jacob as a huge Deadhead, my partner.
So he didn't want to be left out.
Right. He wouldn't want to be left out. And I was like, well, Jacob will be really bummed if he can't be in this band. Could it be like female harmony fronted or something? And then I don't know who said it, but somebody joked, well, if we get the dudes in drag, then it's still an all girl band, which I know would really piss some people off. But you know me, I'm like, I'm a troll at heart.
You're courageous, I think, is the word you're looking for. Good trouble, isn't that the phrase?
Yeah, so I love making good trouble. I consider myself a professional rabble rouser. And if I can do that with music, even better. So we were thinking about that and we're like, wow, that would really piss some people off. But it would also make so much sense because the Dead come from this psychedelic tradition and the Merry Pranksters, who were just had this irreverent, colorful, theatrical presence. Mm-hmm. And somehow drag just made sense for that. And so we were just sort of floating this idea for a few months and sort of talking about it with friends, kind of trying to gather who would be good for this band, how would we fill out the lineup, who would be down to do drag. And Jacob suggested our good friend Thomas Brian Eaton, who plays with Miss Tess. If anyone's ever heard of Miss Tess and the Talkbacks, they played together for years. So Thomas is an incredible Jerry player. And so is Jacob. He's a great guitar player by trade, mostly. And mm-hmm. he is very influenced by Jerry Garcia, and he's a great electric guitar player as well.
He certainly is.
Yeah, but he tapped Thomas and said, no, Thomas is a better Jerry player than me. I'm going to play bass and be the Phil in the band. Because Phil Lesh, RIP, he just died a few months ago. Phil Lesh really isn't your normal bass player. He's not playing the ones and fives. He is melodic. He's thinking about counter melodies. He's really like another guitarist in the band. And if you try to play Grateful Dead songs and just play ones and fives, it's not really the spirit of the sound of it. Anyway, so that this could get really, really nerdy. And obviously it does in this band. But all that to say, we didn't actually pull the trigger on doing this. Sorry, very American metaphor. Until our Tennessee state legislature tried to ban drag in public and say that it was indecent. We already have obscenity laws, basic decency laws that have been around forever, right? But this was, you know, a completely unnecessary targeting of the queer community in Nashville. They also passed a ban on trans youth healthcare, which is going to the Supreme Court this year.
Yes.
And they banned drag in public, anywhere where potentially a kid could see it, which includes the Pride Parade and Festival, you know, because there's always drag at that. And that is public. It's in the streets. And if you don't want your kid to see it, you don't bring them around that day, mm-hmm. you know?
When did those things happen that then actually inspired you to really get started? What was that? 2020?
So that was early 2023.
Right.
Early 2023. So this all happened very fast.
Yeah.
And we basically realized we had our why we would do this. Mm. We had our reason to do it. So we decided we would do a one-time benefit show at D's, the local dive bar here that we know and love, where all the Americana bluegrass musicians play. And that we would do a benefit for local LGBTQ causes. And it was just kind of this little collective. We had Lindsay Liu and Kyle Tuttle also sitting in and playing. And it kind of went viral even before the first show. We, you know, put out there that it was happening, this drag Grateful Dead show. And D's, which is just a dive bar where you pay $5 at the door to get in. Right? There's no tickets or anything.
Yeah.
They were forced to set up a ticketing link to sell some pre-sale tickets because they were getting calls from out of state. And, you know, we were okay at that point, but we had just thrown this together. It was like a random cover gig, and we didn't know what we were doing with drag either. So the drag is rough in that first show. It is rough. And we just made it happen and put it together, and it went viral, and people were demanding that we come play their cities. And so we had to sit back and say, okay, well, how can we even do that? Okay, the first step would be to do a next Nashville show and see if people will come and see if we can up our game.
And you went to like a bigger venue for that, didn't you?
Yes. And we also did a live stream of that one. Like D's has a live stream, but it's kind of minimal bar live stream of the stage. But we did a big live stream of that so that people could participate from wherever they were, and they could also like donate to the cause through a QR code. And so yeah, it's
really
been
taken off from there, right? I mean, it's a kind
it
of
really
you're
has.
Fitting it in sort of every couple of months or every few months. You've had a couple of mini tours and
yes.
really grown into like larger venues.
The first festival we booked was the Newport Folk Festival, which blows my mind.
Wow.
And it is not lost on every single folk and Americana and bluegrass musician who's in this band that this is the first time we're all playing Newport, and it's in drag in this band. And it's just so funny. It's like a cosmic joke on all of us. And we find it hilarious. And so that we're very blessed and highly favored in this band. Bertha has she has God on her side, I dare say. Don't tell the Tennessee Republicans about it. But Bertha's doing the Lord's work, as they say.
And that being said, it's not just about the activism and the fun, is it? The musicianship is absolutely top notch. Like, I've noticed you're performing sets, multiple sets of all different material on different nights and stuff like this. I mean, that must have taken a huge amount of work.
It is a lot of work. Luckily, we're all really seasoned musicians who know the amount of work that it takes. We don't discount that. And then the drag thing has been the biggest learning curve. Like, we know how to put together a set of music. We know how to rehearse and practice and get it together. And I do all the vocal arranging for the band. Thomas is the music director of the band. Jacob has been managing the band. We now have management, which is really cool. So it's been going really great. And we have sold out a couple of the first places that we've played that have been 1,000 seat venues.
Wow.
We did like over 500 people in New York City our first time playing in New York City. That's crazy.
So you're getting your playing fix partly from Bertha still, even though you're not on the road full time.
Yes. And I play here locally to kind of do my songwriter thing. I have my electric band, apostrophe electric. and I do that every once in a while. And I've been performing a lot just solo too. I host a weekly writer's round every Tuesday night here in East Nashville, where I host two back-to-back rounds. So I curate six different artists every single week. And that's a lot of work, but it's been incredibly rewarding. And I host it every time. I sit there in the round with both rounds. And I mostly, 75% of the time, it's four people on stage, I get to listen 75% of the time and play 25% of the time. And that's been really, really good for me.
It's amazing. Yeah, you've become like an event promoter too. Yeah. And I mean, that's quite a thing every week, but you're building a community there, I guess. And has that contributed to your kind of settling in as primarily a songwriter in Nashville over the past few years? That's kind of like your main... Yeah. thing right now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I feel like I know a lot of the songwriters too, and I know what they do. I've learned so much from everybody. Every single person I hear sing a song, songs are so different, songwriters are so different, and it really gives me a lot of perspective. I love just like a big part of what I think my job is as an artist is to kind of have my finger on the pulse and the zeitgeist of things, So. That's not just like politics and world events and stuff. It's also like in the community. What kind of songs are people writing? How are people feeling? Like what's out there? And it really helps me stay like really grounded, if that makes sense. And not get stuck in my head too.
And you've also been doing co-writing with other artists really right across the spectrum, haven't you? With kind of pop artists and country artists. I believe there's Sarah Potenza. She's more like a pop singer. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was on The Voice. She's just also a really good friend of mine. We got really, really close during 2020. And just after that, we started writing a ton together. And she's like family to me. And something being on the road for a long time that was really isolating was I just didn't feel like I could have deep relationships with people. I had wide reaching relationships, but they were all kind of shallow depth wise because there was only so much. We got these brief hangs, when we were at a festival together and stuff, or when I was in town and kind of barely here, just doing laundry and kind of like not having all my faculties to go deep. So now I have just much deeper hangs too. Still with a lot of different people, but it's been really good to connect with other writers like that. And I'm very omnivorous with my writing, and I love to write anything that people will let me write with them. So I was on TikTok for a little bit too, and I built quite a following on there actually until my TikTok was deleted. That's a whole other story. But I met a lot of artists that I would have not otherwise met through TikTok, including some pop artists. And those people have become friends of mine too and collaborators. And I really felt like I needed to kind of break out of my mold of just the kind of bluegrass Americana people that I knew. And so I've been able to do that through hosting this writer's round because there's all different genres, and through TikTok And yeah, it's great.
I've noticed for Jane's Hideaway, I mean, obviously I'm here in the UK and unfortunately I can't go and attend your weekly writers round and go and sit in the audience. But from what I've seen, you very much prioritize like making sure that there's good diversity of representation, whether that's women, people of color. Has that been important for you to make sure that that happens? I know it is for me as like a booking agent in the past and a promoter to make sure. It just takes that intention, doesn't it, to make sure that women have a seat at the table. Is that something you've really approached in a kind of deliberate manner?
Oh, yeah. I mean, on my round, you know, men are guests. women are the bread and butter. Yeah, I really try to champion female songwriters, especially. Mm-hmm. I hate to see a round that's all dudes in Nashville. That's just so boring. And a lot of the really established ones are. There are a lot of female writers, though. And I do try to, my round is very queer as well. I could do better with racial diversity for sure, though, because I still kind of am more in that Americana-y zone in that it's just very white.
Yes.
So I'm trying to figure out ways. I think it really is about your community that you're in and the people that you're meeting. And so to me, I need to start getting out there and going to events that are not just those folks. I need to seeing more of the Black music in Nashville, meeting people in that scene and inviting them to my scene. And that's something I could definitely do better at. And I really need to. That's kind of the next step. I gotta get serious about that. It's not as diverse as it should be to reflect Nashville.
This podcast is called Women Folk, and I've quite deliberately decided to interview women working in roots music and have a kind of opportunity here to tell their stories. One of the things I'm asking my guests about is just, you know, to talk a little bit or share your thoughts about what particular challenges you think that they face or what you've seen in your own career.
I always have a hard time pinpointing like particular things. I feel like I've been very lucky in touring. I know that my experience being a woman touring with a bunch of dudes, my band was me and a bunch of guys, that is very different than the experience of women touring solo, all around the world, completely alone, safety wise, you know. The boundaries people are willing to cross, you know, I know that that's a different experience, but it's also a different experience just because of my personality. Like I'm somebody who leads with bitchiness as a way to avoid a lot of unpleasant experiences. And let me tell you, it works.
I mean, again, I would say with, I know you're being self-deprecating, but
no,
again,
it's kind of real though. I'm actually not that apologetic about it. Like it does impoverish me in some ways, but mostly it has served me well, honestly.
You mean you don't take any crap? You mean you kind of don't leave a window for that sort of response?
Yeah, I'm fairly stern with my boundaries, especially with men who even approach me at like a merch table or something.
Is that because you, out of experience, you know that there are unpleasant or kind of unfortunate behaviors that you have witnessed there?
Yeah. And you give people an inch, they'll take a mile. You know, I figured out a defense mechanism, I think, at a young age of how to be friendly, but prickly at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense, but like affable, but threatening. I don't know if that, does that make any sense?
You mean kind of maintaining some boundary between
boundaries. Like I have good boundaries, you know,
it's kind of, you're in this perpetual forward motion and you're meeting a lot of people and people feel they know you through your art and your music. You're kind of making this connection, but they're not your best buddies, right? Necessarily. So
yeah, I find it's about being able to communicate boundaries really strongly. And that I realize that is not easy for everyone, especially if they were raised in a certain way. I feel very lucky to have been socialized and raised, you know, in a very feminist context in San Francisco Bay Area. And my mom is a badass who does not suffer fools, you know, and like I feel lucky that that comes fairly naturally to me to be able to be friendly with people. But as at the moment a boundary is transgressed, I firmly let people know that. I mean, it works okay, but I realize that that is like lucky that I've been able to sort of figure that out for myself. And it's hard for people who have a problem with conflict, which I clearly don't.
Tell us a bit more about your upbringing in California and like how you kind of came to be playing music. Was that something that came out of your upbringing and the encouragement of your family? Or
yeah, definitely. So my dad is a musician and a songwriter, just kind of in his local community in his small town, and he has been since I was a kid. And you know, he's still doing like a bluegrass night on Tuesdays now, and he plays with his band, which is kind of like an Americana country rock band called the Killbillies.
Fantastic.
And my mom is a big music fan, and met my dad because she was a big music fan, you know. And I feel very lucky that I grew up around a lot of music, not just going to concerts, which I did. My parents really prioritized and probably spent a lot of their fun money every year on going to concerts. You know, I probably saw at least 10 kind of big, like touring concerts a year, you know, including
like. Did that plant the seed for you about being a performer yourself?
Oh, for sure. But also I think it was crucial that I saw my dad performing music on this local level too, and playing bluegrass with his friends and playing rock and blues. And he even like, I take after him. He used to host the open mic. It was a once a month open mic in my hometown, and he did that for years. And I got to see, you know, songwriters of all different kinds. And I think that that is a big part of my, my roots, to be able to hold that kind of space and be non-judgmental about just where people are at in all aspects of their process. I've also been a teacher of music for a long time too, which requires a lot of patience and grace and like, you know, non-judgment. People are just where they're at, you know? So I think that gave me some really great examples of how to be, and that there's a lot of different ways to play music. You can be the Rolling Stones playing a stadium, and you can also be my dad, you know, playing bluegrass with his buddies down at the local sandwich shop.
It's amazing. I mean, I think I didn't really realize until I was, you know, 40 and my husband bought me a banjo and this entire adventure started, that ordinary people can write songs and can form bands and can play music. And there's this whole community there that was hidden from me, even though really I should have known. But it's not something that I kind of encountered as a teenager. It's really a fabulous thing. Yeah.
It's so good for you, right? And it keeps you in community as well. Like if maybe you don't go to church or something, you know, like people used to get that out of church mostly, mm-hmm. and they kind of still do in the South. But to have a group of people that you're meeting with regularly, knitting club, book club, whatever it is, you know, like you can do that with music, and it doesn't have to be everyone's famous and rock stars, you know, or making money off of it at all.
Is imposter syndrome a thing for you? Because I heard you on the wonderful River of Suck podcast, and the sort of theme there is this whole thing about the River of Suck is something that you've got to cross. I suppose it's more of an American expression, but you know, you're not brilliant immediately. It takes years of practice and work to become, you know, a brilliant songwriter. And it was quite interesting what you were saying on there about keeping on doing it? I think this is in relation to songwriting.
I don't know. I think I have definitely had imposter syndrome when I first moved to Nashville. I remember being very intimidated about playing shows here because it was in front of so many peers that I really highly respect, who are some of the best in the world. Oh, I was shaking in my boots. I remember Front Country, we sold out the Station Inn, I think our first time playing there.
Which, for people who don't know, is kind of a legendary roots music bluegrass venue in Nashville.
But I did not have a good time at that gig because I, you know, felt like, you know, everyone who was in the audience, you know, a lot of it was just tourists, but there were people in the audience who intimidated me, you know. And that, I think, has just been exposure therapy that's gotten me over it. You know, I mean, it's also probably that I've gotten a lot better since moving here. But I think it's also realizing, talking with people and realizing that everyone kind of feels that way. Even people like Chris Eldridge in the Punch Brothers, you know, and like these people that you think are so good, you know, they're playing in front of all their peers and they're like, oh, I suck. And so everybody feels that way. And also nobody cares that much, you know, like everybody has the perspective here in Nashville that you're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. You're going to have days where it kind of gets the best of you. Either the sound's not good or the crowd is intimidating for some reason, you know, like everybody just gives each other a lot of grace, you know, and we've seen each other fail. We've seen each other have bad gigs. And even though you're like the best in the world, you know,
so you do feel it's a very supportive community there by the sound of it.
It really is. It really is. And people really treat each other as equals and realize that it's all relative and in the eye of the beholder, you know, and like sometimes bands that you don't think are the best musicians are the ones that are doing the best in the business. That happens all the time. Even like younger bands like that are just getting started. It's like, you know, bands that are so good and they're like the best players, but it's this other band that has this thing that's catching on, you know, there's really no telling.
Yeah.
There's, you know, it's like talent and a lot of luck and money and connections. Indeed. And a lot of factors go into it than just who's the best. And everybody knows that. It's very humbling. So I would say people are very humble here. Even if like somebody doesn't think I'm the best songwriter they've ever heard, they're still glad that I won a Grammy. I felt very supported. And I think it's partly because I've done so much work to be in community and building community and not just out for myself, you know, that I feel like when I came home, it really felt like people felt like this was their win too, which that was really, really sweet.
You mentioned teaching. Is that something that you are doing more of these days because you're kind of not on the road all the time?
I do a little bit of teaching. I'm not teaching full time at all, but a lot of my friends here in Nashville have like just asked me for the odd voice lesson. So people have been asking me about that. And then I was asked to teach this weekly class for a month through the Nashville School of Traditional Country Music, which is a nonprofit that does just kind of chill classes for adults and kids. And so yeah, I'm gonna try my hand at doing a group class here locally that is aimed at musicians. Like hopefully some friends will take it. People have expressed interest where they wanna re-up their vocal technique a little bit, take it a little more seriously. Maybe they're more of an instrumentalist who hasn't taken voice as seriously as an instrument. And I have a lot of things to offer for that. And
I think that is a kind of trend in bluegrass. I know that you're much more than bluegrass. I think there's a lot of emphasis on like instrumental virtuosity. That's quite interesting that there's a niche there, isn't there, for you to be working on improving the whole general level of that.
Yeah, I think so. And I something that I've been trying to pitch too is a lot of bluegrass camps, like adult camps, like folk bluegrass. They don't always have vocal classes that are like technical. They'll often have repertoire classes, like, okay, learn the harmonies of the Stanley Brothers or something, you know, but not technical. And I wish that they offered more of that. So I've been offering my services and I'm teaching a few different things. I'm teaching at Rocky Grass Academy in Colorado, I'm going to be teaching songwriting for that this year for the first time. So I'm really excited about that because that's the happiest place ever.
That's a legendary festival in Colorado, isn't it?
And then I teach some adult camps. I'm teaching the California Coast Music Camp in California in July. I'm teaching at Voice Works in Port Townsend, Washington, which is right before Fiddle Tunes, which is an incredible couple weeks of music. So yeah, I like teaching at camps, especially if they're in like really beautiful locations where I get to hang out for a week and hang out in nature, you know?
It sounds like you've got the balance right for the career you want right now in terms of a nice mix of songwriting, performance, teaching.
It pays just enough to get by. It's not, I'm not making a ton of money. The songwriting thing, if I had had these cuts with Molly Tuttle and Sierra Farrell in the 90s, I would have bought a house with that, you know, and invested in music and, you know, putting out an album. I would love to put out a Melody Walker album again. It's been like 10 years since I put out an album under my own name, over 10 years, and I just can't afford to do it. It's too expensive. I need like 20 grand at least to do that. Yeah, eventually I will. I will, but I don't have the money yet.
Yeah, the whole music business paradigm, in some ways it's more accessible than ever before, but in a lot of ways, you know, it's made it extremely difficult for musicians, especially a kind of who aren't superstar level, to make a living. You've been kind of courageously standing up for social justice, standing up for what's right, and whether that's through your art or speaking up. How do we navigate that in times like these, which seem to be getting darker and more crazy?
I am currently grappling with exactly what I can do as a songwriter, as a musician, in the face of what is happening right now in the United States, and obviously for the world too, because, you know, we've made ourselves the bosses of the world in ways that are real and fake. So I'm currently grappling with that. I have been practicing writing protest music, you know, my whole life, and especially more in recent years. So I think it's important to be practicing that. And if you are in the practice of that and you've been trying it, then I think you stand a shot at being effective when the time comes. So, well, we know that there's sort of an empathy deficit going on, you know, and that's the reason that Trump was able to be elected twice, because there are people who clearly are out for their own interests alone, their own pocketbooks, I guess, and really do not have a sense of what's harming other people. And so I do think that music can cut to the heart. It can promote empathy. And so doing that in a very subtle way that can get through to those people, if anything could get through, it will be music and art. But it also has to be the right messenger too, you know? Like, I think probably would be the most impactful if some big country artists could do that in a way that was very subtle, right? That doesn't just get all their records burned like the Chicks. and I don't know if that exists.
I guess it's important not to get overwhelmed by all the negativity as well, isn't it? And to kind of carve a space for yourself to, you know, appreciate the small and good things in life. And it's kind of a fine balance between being aware and making sure that you're aware and engaged with the world, but not being overwhelmed by the kind of deluge of negativity. That's my feeling.
Totally. And there's a way, I've thought a lot about, you know, the protest song being of grievance and the protest song of what we're fighting to create. Like the positive side too is so important to imagine the future that we want. Mm-hmm. And I think we can help people imagine better things through music as well, and to sing into existence how we would like the world to be. So that's another way to think about it too. And as always, creating art, creating joy, creating even escape is also part of it. It's also necessary. And so I'm not saying everyone has to write protest songs, you know, like it's all part of it. We have to keep creating art. It is part of the resistance, even if it's not explicit.
Yeah. And on that positive note, we'll come to a close. Is there anything you want to tell everybody about in terms of what you're up to in 2025?
Yeah. It's mostly going to be in North America. Most of my touring will be with Bertha, the Grateful Drag Band. They can find us at Grateful Drag on Instagram. And I'm at Melody Write Songs on Instagram. I'm in a very open place where I'm trying to build community and resilience, you know, hopefully on a global scale too. So if you have an inkling that we ought to be connected, I would love to hear from you, or just at least come give a follow and you can watch what I'm doing here in East Nashville. Yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully I'll have a few USA listeners too. So everybody who's visiting Nashville, you know, make sure to check out the weekly Jane's Hideaway Writers Round.
Tuesdays. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Melody. Thanks for being part of this.
Thanks, Maria.
Women Folk was produced and presented by me, Maria Wallace. Check out the show notes to find out more about Melody Walker. You can listen, subscribe, and download episodes of Women Folk wherever you get your podcasts. Or visit my website truenorthmusic.co.uk for more information. Thanks for listening, and please join me again soon for the next episode of Women Folk. Thank you.